So you made it to Tokyo.
Now, I was thinking about this and I wanted to start talking about toilets, Japanese toilets. And I will talk about Japanese toilets because I had a bit of a problem with my Japanese toilet. But I cannot not start by talking about Andrei Rublev, Kei Nishikori, first round of the Olympics. I was almost heartbroken when that came out. Because as you know, Nishikori is my pick.
Because you can't talk about toilets.
Well, no, because I will come back to toilets. But Nishikori is my pick for gold. He's like the romantic fairy tale. This is what his whole life has been about. He's going to upgrade that medal to gold. And Rublev is for me Rublev. So I was pretty much devastated when that draw came out. I mean, that's enormous for a first round. Whatever tournament we're talking about, that's big.
Yeah, well, I mean, for Nishikori, it's just being that dangerous floater, isn't it? Tough. I mean, Rublev, absolute winning machine. I think that's going to be tough for Kay. If there was a crowd, maybe it would be different. But
yeah, I agree.
It's going to be tough.
So that's my... So at some point we can do predictions in this and... do I stick with it? So that honestly, when that draw came out and we saw Andy Murray against Felix Auger-Aliassime, you're like, that's good. Oh, and there's a few in there you're thinking, oh my word. And then Murray and Salisbury have got Herbert and Mahu in the doubles first round. You're thinking, oh, but it was that matchup that stood out to me, and I thought, that's devastating. That's not a good first round for me.
I know, but there's always going to be one, isn't there? And I know that's a bit of a shocker, isn't it, that one? But at least it means the action will be go, go, go from the very, very beginning. Because if everybody had sort of the right sort of draw, then it would just be waiting until the seeds really got going. So, you know, exciting time, potential upsets, early doors.
I know, but and it's always this thing, you look at those ties and you think, great, we're going to have an upset. And then you get to the next round and that person's no longer there. And, you know, the upset at the moment is wonderful. And then later in the draw, you're like, ugh. You know what I mean? When you've... okay. We had
so favourite, though, has that changed? Or are you going to stick with Kay?
I think Djokovic looks like his draw is pretty good. Top half of the draw. And looks... I know. And that is actually the Rublev Nishikori little chunk you would meet one of those two couple of matches in. Zverev's also in his section of the draw. Andy Murray's down the bottom with Medvedev, but he's obviously got Felix Auger-Aliassime early on. And I know we've talked about the leveler that is three sets in terms of Djokovic. And if it was over five sets, and this year for the first time, the men's final is three, not five sets. So you really feel it's leveled out. And Djokovic, to me, is still... But the conditions, I have to say, and I've been talking to a few people who have been out there practicing at the Ariake Tennis Park, it's the heat and the humidity. Amina, I know in the UK where you are, it's hot and we're not used to that heat back home.
Heat
and it's weird because we're just not used to that kind of heat. I've got the family back home saying we can't sleep and it's so uncomfortable, but it's very much like that out here. It is very hot and it is very humid. I think we've got possibly thunderstorms coming in over the weekend. What day is it today?
That's like our weather forecast. We're really far away from Tokyo, but how come we got the same weather forecast?
Is our weather the same? We are current. So it's Thursday afternoon, so Thursday morning with you, and we're currently 34 degrees, and I think the thunderstorms are coming in around Monday or something.
Right, okay, so our thunderstorms are due, I think, actually for tomorrow. Tomorrow evening.
You're going to have them first.
Maybe the weekend.
You have them first and they'll
sort of
head over.
Clear everything.
But it's from what
anybody that complains that, you know, it's not that hot, because yes, it's not 34 degrees here. It is about 31 degrees here. However, we are not built for this.
And you're probably, are you in a house with carpet? All those kind of things that don't suit.
This is what people don't understand.
Yeah.
We are not built for
heat waves.
Any sort. All houses are designed to keep us warm in the winter. That's what they're designed for. We have no AC. No one owns AC. It doesn't happen. You might get in a hotel, in a posh hotel if you're lucky. But we don't have AC at home. We have a fan that can move hot air around, but that's about it. So anybody who thinks that it's not that bad, it is bad because you can't sleep.
Can I show you my AC controller? So you tell me. No, you tell me which button does what on that remote control, because honestly, and this is no joke, and I've been here since... I think I've been here since Sunday. So what are we talking, 3 or 4 days? Every time, look at that, it takes me 5 minutes or so. Because what do those buttons mean? Do they mean anything to you?
They mean something to people who speak Japanese.
Yeah,
because
but...
it's just there's obviously words on there. It's just written in Japanese.
But each time it takes me 5 or 6 minutes to put the air conditioning
just
on.
Just bash them.
So you wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning because of jet lag and it's really hot. So you start pressing all these buttons and you hear all this kind of beeping and stuff and nothing happens. Like, I don't know what that means.
Mm.
Means nothing to me.
Yeah, just have to go with all of them.
So
I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me because I don't speak Japanese.
Do you not? I'm not unearthing a hidden skill.
No. Although we have been doing that on holiday, hidden skills, and I've come up with a couple.
Oh, can you tell us what your hidden skills are?
Yeah, I mean, they're really not that exciting or interesting at all. But we were doing this actually the other night. Well, one is flags, and I'm very good at flags.
What?
As in,
oh, I show you a flag, you tell me where the flag comes from. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. I know all the flags. It's not a fun game. And weirdly, I was just challenged to say the alphabet backwards, and I've never tried that before, but I just did. So
without looking, just as in off the top of your head.
Oh yeah, without just off the top of my head.
How many
Zed?
How many pauses? I'm not going to get you to do it now because I don't think it would make good podcast material.
No. But this is not. I'm not suggesting this at all.
No, but I'd like to hear it.
I was quite surprised myself. I just sort of said it methodically, like Z, Y, X, that sort of thing.
Were you drunk?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, there we go. You see, I think a few drinks can unearth a hidden skill, or can make an average skill a little bit better.
Yeah. So I mean, look, they're not the most exciting. I would have loved to have come up with something more interesting than that. But,
well, look,
there you go.
I don't have any hidden skills. If that helps. I found this piece of paper with some flags on, and I thought, great, I can test you.
Oh no.
But no, even my 6-year-old twins could give me these flags. Like, there's nothing.
Okay, yeah.
No, there's nothing.
They're not the difficult ones.
Nothing surprising about those flags. But yes, I'm here and I'm safe, and because everyone knows rules and regulations, but coming from a Group 1 or Group 2 country, of which the United Kingdom is Group 2 with the COVID and the variants, you had to be a little bit stricter. So for the first 3 days, it was pretty much hotel where we're working, which is the International Broadcast Centre, and hotel. And then Uber Eats. And if you think that the air conditioning thing is difficult, you try ordering on Uber Eats. I mean, that I was looking at pictures and I'm thinking, I hope that's what I think it is, because I'm about to order it. So it was for the first 3 days, it's pretty strict, which it has to be. We have the test. It took 2.5 hours to get through immigration.
Oh, wow.
Well, actually, no, that's quite good, because some people I know took 5 hours.
Right. And that's because of COVID stuff.
Yeah, that's just they kind of check. No. They're checking certificates. They're checking. You do a COVID test there as well. So you have to wait for the result of that. But in terms of people arriving, it was like on my plane, it was pretty empty because the UK is on the red list. In Japan, we've got special exemptions to be here to work on the games. And it's why things are quite strict, which they have to be. So, but I'm through my 3 days now. It doesn't mean I can suddenly go out and roam Tokyo. It just loosens things a little bit. So you get sort of a touch more freedom, even in terms of your movement around where you're working. But it's it's very strict. Everything's sanitized, as it has to be. The athletes, they're in sort of holding camps before they get into the village. And I think it's pretty much once you're out, then I think maximum 48 hours, you're then out of the village.
Yeah.
You know, you heard the stories in recent years where they'd sort of party for the second week if they're in action in the first. I think now it's pretty much like holding camp in, when you're out,
oh,
you leave.
Yeah. I mean, no, there's none of that that going on, is there, in terms of, I suppose, the standard Olympic experience. But I mean, it's so difficult for them, isn't it? I think they're obviously just going to do the best they can, keep it as strict as they can. But, you know, it's been inevitable that there have been a few positive cases already. I mean, do you know how many athletes are there in total? I mean, in my head, it's like 10,000. I mean, it just must be huge, because I just think about the athletes we'd send from GB. I mean, that's hundreds.
Yeah, I don't know the exact number. I've been so focused and zoned in on the tennis. I mean, ask me anything about anyone who's here for the tennis, I can give you numbers and stats. But it's a lot, and I think that's why they're not all in the village at the moment. So there'll be some in a holding camp, and they come out a bit later. So I think they're trying to. Obviously, tennis is one of the first sports. So a couple of the sports are underway now. Football. And I think softball's underway. We've got the opening ceremony on Friday. What day is it? Day 3rd, so that's tomorrow night. But there's
tennis start on Saturday.
Yeah, tennis starts on Saturday, okay, so it's one of the first events. There's some events like table tennis and volleyball, and there they run through the whole of the Olympics right until the end. But I think they're trying to stagger it as much. I mean, the organisation, as I think you'd expect in Japan, is phenomenal in terms of how you go in places, how you come out, how you sanitise. It's really, it's a phenomenal setup, I have to say. But yeah, it's I kind of can't wait to get going now. You've had the build up. You're here. The jet lag has sort of. But you know what? I was listening. I get your thoughts on this. Well, I probably know your answer to this. I was listening to a debate on the radio. I can't even tell you whether it was morning or evening because I'm so confused. And it was about the Olympics, and they were arguing: should some sports don't deserve to be there because basically the people involved in those sports don't care.
And yes,
yeah,
bold.
And one of the sports was tennis. So they said,
"Oh no,
yes." They
didn't think it was going that way.
No, because the argument was there was someone arguing who was a former badminton player saying, "This is, you know, my whole life was building up to the Olympics. It's the biggest thing I could have won, almost the only thing that mattered." Whereas in say golf or tennis, it's not the biggest thing, and they can win Grand Slams. And they were saying things like, "Well, Federer decides to be there, oh, because my knee hurts. And Nadal's not there, oh, because he needs a rest. So therefore, the sport as a whole doesn't deserve to be part of the Olympics because they have bigger..." So they were basically saying, keep it very simple, would Andy Murray swap one of his great... If he could have a choice between winning Wimbledon or winning a gold medal, which would he choose?
Oh, well, he's done both, so.
But if he hadn't done either, which would he choose? That's their kind of. And they did that for golf, and they did that for men's football, not women's football. They sort of said Neymar in Brazil. Would it be a gold medal, or would it be winning the World Cup? And
well, with men's football, I mean, to be fair, for our international listeners, they might not be aware, we don't send a team anymore. Yeah, we did for 2012, and I think we did way, way, way back before then, because we play as nations, not as Great Britain. So standard throughout the year, we play as... I mean, I don't know why I'm explaining this to you. I'm more explaining it to our international
listeners. No, go, carry on.
tell me if I'm wrong. But, you know, we've got England, Scotland, Wales.
Have we?
And they all play separately. And basically, we just can't do it. Is that right? Is it just that because we can't do it? They just can't agree to come together and play for Great Britain? Because we have to enter as Great Britain, right?
And it's an under 23 tournament in the men's, and there isn't an age limit in the women's.
Yes.
You see what I mean? So that the women's World Cup team can come to the Olympics, but the men's couldn't. But yes, it's largely to do with everyone agreeing and who does it go under and who takes charge and how does it happen. So
I suppose that it does back up the point that people must not care if we're just going to say, "Wow, we just won't send the team then." But too difficult. But
I was kind of sort of almost shouting at the radio, and I almost wanted a message in because they were saying, and I know in a debate you really have to go strong on one or the other. And I thought the guy arguing for it, I didn't feel it was strong enough. I do see slightly the argument that in some sports this is the pinnacle and this is everything, whereas in tennis maybe it's not. But this isn't exceptional Olympics. A number of these players aren't coming here because of the situation, because these tennis players are living in bubbles. They're saturated by them. It has to be like that. A number of them are injured. With Roger Federer, it's, you know, if you're injured, you're injured. You can't be like, well, you know. And Nadal, we know it's an injury. We know there's a foot injury. It's not just I'm resting my body, and he's had that for a while. But I've been obviously looking into all these players who are here, and the amount of them that say it's my dream. I've grown up wanting to represent my country in Olympics. This would be the biggest thing in my life if I were to win gold. And that's coming from Iga Świątek, who's a Grand Slam champion, and others who say this. I don't know. I just found it weirdly. Do I see it a bit more in golf? I don't know. I just...
Well, golf is so new. It's so new to the Olympics, and I think it does take a little bit of time to build. I mean, in Rio, it was not a full field. We won, we got the gold, but it wasn't a full field. But I do think that people sort of saw it and saw that it was a big deal. And now Justin Rose gets to say he has a gold medal, and I think people really wanted you're part of that. But as you say, this year it is a little bit exceptional. I would say to the person who is from badminton, did you say a badminton player?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I would say to that person that well, okay, so you might have, you know, all of the effort that has gone into getting you to Tokyo in terms of these COVID restrictions, the bubble that's going to be there, you know, you've not been doing that week in, week out for a year now. I mean, since last August, this is what these players have been doing every single week. I mean, she might be saying, well, it's really worth it for the Olympics because it's a one-off thing, but when it's been your life, it can be really difficult. But I do agree that, I mean, if you look at the rest of the other fields from normal years in Rio and London, they've been so, everybody's played. Everybody's been wanting to play the whole time. Everyone's been gutted and desperate to pick up medals. So I disagree with that with tennis being lumped in, but I do sort of understand football and golf. Golf because it's so new, football because, I mean, there's no defence. We don't even send a team. There's just no defence of that people care about the football as much as they care about a World Cup. Like, they don't. That's just how it goes.
And I know tennis has a lot of superstars, so maybe it's an easy target. So as golf, you know, the guys at the very top of golf are superstars, are multimillionaires. And it just felt, I don't know, I just felt tennis was, maybe I'm too much in the tennis bubble, but it was just unfairly being picked on. And even she mentioned Andy Murray, because I think she was, maybe it was at the 2012, I think she was shared a combination or something with Andy Murray or something like that. And she was just saying, you know, was it that important to him? I mean, of course it's that important to him. I think it's, and you listen to some of these, but like Ash Barty saying it means everything because you're representing your country. And I think, but then again, you know, would Ash Barty give up everything she's won at the very highest level for an Olympic gold?
No, because she represents her country everywhere she goes. That's the thing. AUS is next to her name everywhere that she plays, and it will continue to be. And I don't think there's ever an event where they're not representing their country. Yes, it might feel a little stronger, but for me, I think it's more about them being part of the other athletes, being part of, for Ash, being part of that green and gold group of players or athletes that is going to be out competing. I think it's more the camaraderie, and you've just got everybody excelling at the best of their sports, and it's the whole mix. It's incredibly different, I think, for tennis players. I never played in Olympics. I mean, I timed my retirement pretty poorly, stopping in 2011 with the London Olympics the following year. So that was slightly not ideal, I suppose. But yeah, I don't really know what else to say. I don't think I agree with you. I don't think tennis qualifies. I think it does qualify in the fact that, yes, we have these majors through the year. We are very lucky where players can earn millions. You know, unfortunately, for badminton, you can't earn millions in prize money. There has actually been a female badminton player who's earned millions through endorsements, an Indian player, but you can't pick it up through prize money. There isn't the structure there in the sport, and that's the same for a huge amount of sports that happen in the Olympics. So I do understand that. You know, we get a lot of coverage through the year. We get a lot of TV time. We get a lot of airtime. We get a lot of fans, and you know, we fill out a lot of stadiums when we're allowed. And you know, I know that is a very fortunate place to be in, but it's because tennis is the best.
This is a little off topic. Why is squash not an Olympic sport? What's stopping squash being in?
Oh, isn't it this thing about the amount of countries that play it? Because there's always this conversation about netball as well, because netball's not in the Olympics because there just aren't enough countries that play it to a high level. I mean, there are quite a few. I think it's probably the same with cricket, I imagine, in that it's supposed to be sort of a global sport, and that everybody can go and, you know, be quiet, because there is no more global sport than tennis. And I will argue anyone on this. We've done our episode of the tournaments in Guam.
Yeah, we have.
All over the world. You know, in terms of what the Olympics is about, of that you can be from any nation and compete, I think tennis is the best, probably better than anything else. I don't know. I haven't thought about other sports. I only think about tennis, but I'm still going to make that statement. I think it's the best.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You know what I really love? I absolutely love the Olympics. Like, I imagine 90% of the people listening love the Olympics, and I love watching and listening to those sports that I don't see at any time of the year apart from at an Olympics. And what I've also really liked is there's a pool of around, there's a lot of commentators out here and they're all working on different subjects, and we're getting the bus in to work in the morning, and I'm finding it fascinating speaking to people from other sports. So on the way back to the hotel today, I was with a guy who used to play table tennis, represented Great Britain years and years ago, talking to him about table tennis, and someone else on the bus was doing archery and shooting, and someone else was doing the softball and the volleyball, and I just find it fascinating speaking to all these people in the different sports, because we spend most of our year around tennis people, which is amazing, but it's so nice coming at these other sports and talking to people about their sports, and it's that one time when, you know, archery is going to be on the global stage. And it's the only time in 4 years I will watch archery. And all these different, I just find it fascinating. And now the extra dimension of speaking, being around people, like there are surfers out here telling me about the waves and what's going to happen and how it works. And I don't know, I found it really interesting just kind of soaking up all the knowledge from everyone else and all the other sports they're doing, which is, it's just, but someone asked me a question actually, which I will now ask you because you're the professional here. It's about Novak Djokovic, and they said, because obviously we know Djokovic is going for the calendar slam, and the bonus, the icing on the cake, would be the golden slam, getting the gold here. They were wondering that, do you feel that this will disrupt his preparations to win at Flushing Meadows, suddenly coming out to Tokyo with the heat and the humidity and putting himself through this to try and get the gold? Or do you think the position he's in, it will make no difference?
We could have heat and humidity in New York. We've had some really hot and humid years. You just never know which way it's going to go with New York, to be honest. It can be sort of different extremes. But
do you think this will take it out of him to the extent that it might damage him? And his record's up and down in New York. It's not like we're going to Australia and we're like, oh yeah, Australia, that's Djokovic. So they were kind of wondering if you think, and maybe if he was to have a shock defeat. I saw a really fun tweet from Del Potro, who's beaten him at the last two, saying, hey, I'm not there this year. You're going to have a great chance as I'm not there. But
great job. If
he was beaten, it was a shock defeat or a heavy defeat or something like that, and everything has gone through and all the travelling and the quarantine, etc., do you think that will adversely affect him going into the US Open?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, shout out for Del Potro. I mean, did he get a bronze and a silver? Bronze and a silver? Or two bronzes? Something like that. But basically just didn't play tennis in between the two Olympics because he was so injured. So it's a shame he can't make this one, because it would have been a very similar story. Just barely
silver
played.
Silver at Rio, bronze at London. And Djokovic got his bronze, one silver. Medal, the bronze in Beijing in 2008.
So for Djokovic, I don't think it's going to make a difference, to be honest. I think that he is definitely going to be tired. He was tired at Wimbledon. He won Wimbledon. Yeah. He made that commitment that people thought was a little bit silly in playing the Belgrade event the week before the French Open. And everyone was thinking, is he going to pull out at some point of this Belgrade event to get ready for French Open? He didn't. He finished on the Saturday, I believe, and then went and played on the Tuesday. So he had to get from Belgrade to Paris. He still won Roland Garros, which was the hardest one for him to win. He then went to Wimbledon, very, very tired. He won Wimbledon. So I agree that US is always just a little bit more up in the air. And I actually think it's because of where it sits in the calendar, because people are getting tired by that point. They are mentally getting tired. And I do think that is a big factor. But then when we saw him at the US Open last year, if he hadn't have, you know, made that massive mistake, would he have won it? Probably. I mean, almost certainly, really, with how things panned out. But, you know, he got himself defaulted, and that's the way that it ended. So he's going to be going in the favourite for this tournament, the favourite for US Open, the favourite for everything he plays now. So, I don't think it's going to affect him that much. He will be tired at US Open, and his main battle will be with himself, I'm sure. Because, look, if Nadal can get there, he's going to be an underplayed, possibly slightly injured Nadal. You know, team's not playing as well as he was last year, and he's a former champion. You know, where are the threats going to come? Like, there are threats, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, really, as long as he can play to a good level, a sort of a decent level for himself, then I don't really see who's going to be able to beat him. So for me, I think that he is going to win all four slams this year. I think the one question mark is the gold medal.
We talked about this before, but playing this kind of heat, and I think more the humidity. I mean, it's that kind of weather where when you step outside, it's like a hairdryer. You know, people like to call it a breeze, but it's not. It's like someone switched on the hairdryer at full heat and it's just blowing in your face. And after about 10 seconds, you're like, actually, that's quite uncomfortable now. So in terms of tips when you're out there as a player, how would you prepare yourself for these kind of conditions?
Oof. Well, firstly, can we give the players a break with using their towels? It's really difficult to hold a tennis racket when your hand is sweaty. There's just not a lot you can do about it. People wear sweatbands. You can do what Medvedev does and walk on court with white hands looking like you're wearing gloves because he's dipped it in a chalk solution thing to try and keep it dry. I mean, look, that'll last a little bit of time, but it doesn't last that long. You'll see the chalk rubs at the change of ends, all sorts of that. The main thing is trying to keep your hands dry so that you can hold the racket, because if you feel a little bit slippery, look, it's not like the racket's going to fly out of your hand. You will be able to hold on to it, but it will move in your hand as you hit the ball. And what that causes is for you to grip the racket even tighter, which is more tiring. You're more susceptible to cramping or getting injured, and you're just not going to hit as good shots. Like, you just don't want to be gripping a racket at sort of a 10 out of 10. You want to be nice and loose through most of the shot and then just sort of squeeze through the contact a little bit. But again, you never really want to do it absolutely full out, because then you end up sort of muscling the ball. She's not going to play very well. So that definitely has a big impact. I think we'll see a lot of sort of regripping, and it's the hands more than anything. And other than that, it's just general heat management, isn't it? So
there is an extreme weather policy that will be implemented at a threshold of a certain temperature, just over 30 degrees Celsius, and that will be a 10-minute break that will be applied after the second set in both the men's and women's matches.
Men.
In both the men's and women's matches.
That's interesting.
Now, it's going to be allowed between the second and third sets if either player requests such a break, and if both players decline, they'll play on. So it's not automatically going to stop at the end of the second. But if Fina, one of them, says, well, actually, and I was looking through the kind of things you can and can't do, which is, well, I was going to say interesting. It's quite straightforward. If I asked you to tell me, you'd probably know exactly what they were. But you obviously can't do coaching or be looking at electronic devices, or you can't add on a bathroom break to the 10-minute break. You see what I mean? You can do all that in your 10 minutes. But you can change your clothes. You can take a shower. You can have food and drink. You can adjust a medical support. But you can't have medical treatment unless the referee or supervisor has approved it. So it's the standard things that we know are allowed or not allowed. But there is an extreme weather policy that will come in if it's needed. But we have to remember the main court at the Ariake Tennis Park, it's called the Coliseum, the Ariake Coliseum, and it's got a roof. So if it gets really hot, those on centre court, as it will be, it's climate controlled. So they can shut the roof and it will be climate controlled. But on the outside courts, and they've redone in the last year or so courts 1 and 2, but on the outside courts, because there's 11 outdoor courts, that will stay. It's got to stay the same because it's outdoors. But you can implement the heat rule. You can do it on centre court, but then if it gets that bad, roof comes over and off we go again. So
I sort of hope we get to see that, though, because I'd be interested to see how many of the men opt to take it. Because sometimes, basically, this is a rule that the WTA have, but the ATP don't in general tennising times. And it's a combination of heat and humidity. And if it reaches a certain point, you can take a 10-minute break. And the combination of heat and humidity is important because it means that in Australia, in Melbourne, the temperature needs to be above 40 degrees because it's very dry heat in Melbourne for you to have a 10-minute timeout. But if you were doing that, say, in London at Wimbledon, it would probably only need to be early 30s because it's just much more humid, so the combination will just feel so much hotter. So they do this sort of weird spinny test. Oh, they probably have something more technologically advanced than that, but before it used to be this thing that they would flick around, and it was some sort of heat and humidity test to give them a certain number. But I'll be interested to see if the guys do take it up, because it's been a little bit of a controversial rule, because we do have a lot of joint events, and you will have the women taking 10-minute timeouts, but the men don't. And sometime I remember Barbara Stritsova on court spent the entire 10 minutes just ranting at the umpire saying, this is ridiculous. We don't need 10 minutes. You wonder why people don't watch women's tennis? This is it. This is stupid. I mean, she just wasted a lot of energy, to be honest. She could have just sat down in the shade for a bit. But I've always said that when we watch some of the guys go off for their toilet breaks at the end of the second set, it pretty much takes 10 minutes. I mean, they go off for 8 minutes at a time, to be honest. And then by the time they've got all their bags and they've taken the racket out of the plastic sleeve and they've done all sorts of stuff, it's taken over 10 minutes. It happens pretty regularly. So it's sort of the same thing. It's not going to feel that different to somebody just walking off very slowly to take a long toilet break.
I mean, is that with the men, is that a little bit like the on-court coaching when that was happening? Is it like an ego thing? They don't want to... Is it like... I always thought that they wouldn't take on court coaching because they'd see it as a weakness.
Yes, yes. And so many people have said this to me over the years, and they will say things like, similar to the women taking the 10-minute timeout, a lot of people will say that that is a bit of a weakness. People might use the word pathetic, whatever. I mean, it's... nonsense. But then, as I say, you'll watch the guys go off for pretty much an 8-9 minutes. I mean, Nishikori went and had a shower once, didn't he? That is essentially taking your 10-minute break. And the same with coaching. And do you know what I say to everybody who says that to me? They'll go, oh, you know, why do you need a coach to step in and help? And or they'll be watching a women's match and be, oh, okay, here we go, coach comes on to come and save the day and sort things out. Absolute nonsense. Do you say that to Anthony Joshua when he's fighting and he goes and has a chat every 2 minutes with his camp in the corner? You're going to tell him that he's being pathetic because he's having a bit of coaching he's stopping every couple of minutes? It's ridiculous. We are the only sport that does not allow coaching, and if you want it to stay that way, it's absolutely fine. I have no issue with that. But we are the only sport that explicitly, I cannot think of another one. I would love to know if there's another Olympic sport out there across everything where it is explicitly in the rules that no coaching is allowed. Because it's mad. I mean, everything has a half time, a chat with the coach. Coaches can shout from the sideline. They can pass notes. I mean, they can send a water boy out to get information across. And as I say, when they say, oh, you have a sit down, have a chat with your coach, I'm like, you go tell some of the boxers that they're being pathetic and weak because they're having a chat with their coach every couple of minutes.
If they see getting on court coaching as a weakness, you can't see overheating as a weakness. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, in hot, humid conditions, I would say, I'm taking the 10 minutes, male or female. I'm going to go and have a shower. I'm going to go and do what I'm just going to have a break because, I mean, the heat, I'm not very good in heat anyway. It doesn't have to be 40 degrees. But it's just so oppressive. And I think, I mean, is this going to be, I think a fair number will take it. I really do. I mean, as I say, it has to be both to say no for them not to take it. But I can kind of...
Which is the same as the women's, and sometimes it happens.
But I can see the argument maybe for not bringing the coach. I could sort of see that, but I don't see any argument why you wouldn't take, if it was offered in tough conditions, a 10-minute break. Like, I think that's crazy.
But they'll say that it's about fitness. That's the thing. Like, there was all this controversy, well, not controversy, but there was all this argument over the cramping rule. And when I was playing, it went through a phase where every year the cramping rule changed. It was you can have treatment and sit downs, and then it was you can't have any treatment, and then it was you can have physio if you're cramping. Because people would argue that if you have broken down your opponent physically so much that they're cramping, then that is part of winning the battle. That is part of the physical battle. And if they can't continue because they're cramping, then that's just the way that it goes. And you win, essentially, by default. But I think they sort of came down on the side of you can probably have some treatment for cramping is probably fair enough. But that's how people think, you know. They say, well, if I'm tougher than you, if I'm better prepared, I'm better hydrated and I'm fitter than you, and you're down there cramping, why should I have to sit around and wait for you to get treatment?
Just touching on the women's draw, it's whatever people say about players aren't here, that the quality of player we do have here, the quality of player that could cause an upset, that could do something. I mean, we've got Carlos Suarez Navarro against Ons Jabeur. It's another first round I didn't want to see. I didn't want them together in the first. It's another, for me, Rublev Nishikori, as in, I didn't want that to happen so soon. Maria Sakkari's got Annette Kontaveit-Sakkari talking about what a dream this would be to come through this. Asak is down the bottom of the draw. Ash Barty, Sara Cerebez, Tormo. That is not going to be an easy one to start things off. It's just, you look through, Arina Sabalenka's in the top pick with Ash Barty as the third. She's got Magda Linette, Caroline Garcia, Donna Vekic. It's just, the great and good are here. And I am so excited about this getting underway. And in terms of your, who's your favourite for the women's gold? Now we've got the draw.
I just... Do you know what? Before the draw came out, and it's actually nothing to do with the draw, I think it's just more making it a reality. Mm. I was thinking, so Saka playing in Tokyo, she's going to win. Like, yeah, she's going to be the favourite. Yeah. On hard, I mean, couldn't be made for her anymore. But now that the draw's come out, and it's not, I'm not saying that her draw is particularly bad. I mean, it's not at all.
No, it's not.
It's just that it sort of makes it a bit more real. And I start thinking, boy, she's going to be under some serious pressure. I mean, in terms of pressure, I mean, imagine if Nishikori was turning up to Tokyo as like the second seed. It'd just be ridiculous. And that is essentially what she's doing. And I just think, oh, I don't know. I mean, she's been talking about how she's been struggling.
She hasn't played a lot. We've got to add in, she physically, yeah she's practiced, but she has not played since she withdrew from Roland Garros. And as you said, everything else she's dealing with, it's a big ask suddenly to appear in Tokyo at the Olympics, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. I just, there's so many elements. I mean, she's underplayed, but she's pretty good at that. She's not too bad at sort of turning up and finding her level, particularly on a hard court. So I don't hold too much weight on that, because she does have an okay draw that she could sort of work her way in a little bit. She's going to need to pick it up by the time she's playing Swiatek. But I just think the pressure that she's going to be under, the struggles that she's been having off the court with media attention and general pressure. We've had more articles, or are they called articles when they're in those magazines? I guess so. Pieces on Osaka. Yeah. We've had her documentary come out. You know, she's talked about her mental health struggles, and to go from essentially taking a break from the sport to rest and recover and deal with herself in terms of off the court, to then first tournament back be the Olympics in Tokyo as the second seed. And I mean, it's just, it's literally massive. I mean, that is the most pressure she can be under, right? Like, surely that is the absolute maximum. So I do have slight concern for her that she's going to be okay and this isn't going to set her back a bit. But, you know, maybe, and I know this is going to sound bad, I'm just saying, you know, these things in hindsight can always work out in your favour. Maybe an early loss at the Olympics and all of that pressure dissipated will really help her going into the US Open, because she'll feel a lot of pressure going into the US Open as well as defending champ. So, yeah. And maybe she'll then be able to play better there. I know that she would absolutely be desperate to get a gold medal in Tokyo, of course, but I'm just saying that this feels like an ask. If she's able to win this tournament, I think that is... I'm always impressed with what Osaka can do on the court, but that would be seriously impressive.
Now, as we've learned, don't put any weight by my predictions, because they are truly shocking. But I don't agree so easily. for the men's, I'm sorry, Nishikori, I just can't see past that Rublev first round match. I'm going for a Djokovic-Medvedev final.
Okay.
With
1 and 2 seeds, lovely.
With
bold.
With Medvedev winning. Oh. And in the women's, I'm going for I'm going for a Muguruza.
Ooh.
Sakkari final.
Oh. Okay, there you go.
There you go. You see, don't. Yeah, thank you. With Sakkari winning. There we go.
Okay.
Who are you going for?
I like that. Sakkari to win the gold medal.
Why not? Amazing
story. I think that is a great shout, to be honest. I can so see that. Hey, how come Svitolina's name is still Svitolina? Didn't she change her name to Monfils?
Well, she has, but I'm not sure if everyone's got the memo or how far in advance they sort of plan these bits. But yes, she has. It's
going to be tough for radio comms, isn't it? We're going to be calling her Monfils?
She'll never play Monfils, so it shouldn't be that hard. What do you mean?
Well, no, but as in, if we're doing radio commentary and then somebody turns on the radio and they hear us talking about Monfils, they're going to think we're talking about Gael, not Alina, no?
So what's Monfils playing Barty for? Because she is. So did you just duck out? What's your prediction? Because I need two minutes enough, at the end enough. To tell you about my toilet.
Okay. All right, okay.
Before
I'll
you go.
Okay, really quickly then. I love your Zachary shout. I think that's brilliant. I'd love to steal it, but I won't. I'm not that mean. I think Świątek's going to beat Osaka. I'm going to say Świątek for the women's.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's not a final. Former. She beat Osaka earlier than that, just to clarify. And then for the guys, Djokovic.
Quickly, two things. David sent a message on Twitter just saying asterisk all over again, because I think one of us said
that was
it.
Me.
I think it was you, wasn't it?
It was me, and I knew it at the time. And it really annoyed me because I hate mistakes like that. It's like people ordering an espresso. I mean, what are you ordering? Like, just what are you doing? I just can't stand it.
I didn't think it was me. Okay, so, and finally on my toilets, you've been to Japan. I've been to Japan before. Mm. I'm a little bit older than when I was here before. I was doing the thing you do when Roger gets a little bit older with you, showing my children a tour of my room. It didn't take very long. Got to the toilet. Obviously, toilet's got lots of buttons on it, which we don't have those toilets in the UK, right? And
yep.
And obviously all the writing's in Japanese. Don't know what it means. So I'm pressing buttons saying, hey, look, boys, look what the toilet does. And I pressed the button that said kids because I thought, what's it going to do? Right. And this long thing, like a straw, comes out from the middle of the toilet. I was like, hey, isn't that fun? And then I got completely soaked. The thing started spraying me with water and the bathroom's tiny. And suddenly it's like a fire hose is going off in the toilet. And I can't find the button to retract the little straw type thing, and I'm just, everyone's sort of laughing on the phone as I'm saying, hey boys, look, you press this button and your seat is hot, and this one it's like a hairdryer, and this one got completely soaking wet. So now I've learnt my lesson and I don't touch. I just sit on it. I don't press any buttons because I cannot tell you. I was literally holding the phone going, hey boys, look, this thing comes out, and then the next minute I am absolutely soaking wet.
I love that.
In my toilet, in my hotel room. But you know what? That was day one, jet lag. Things have changed since then, sort of. But yeah, I had to tell you about the toilet. But
amazing.
Now you have to go and continue your holiday now, and I have to put my aircon on because I kept it off because of noise levels, and I'm literally sweating. So
yeah, fair enough.
I need some air conditioning. You need to carry on with your holiday, but I think we're all set. I think we are ready. We're ready for the Olympics to begin.
We are. I can't wait. I'm going to be watching it.
Amazing. And we're going to try our best sort of schedules, once it all starts permitting, to link up next week and sort of worst case we'll do it the beginning of the week after when it's all done and dusted, but we will try our best to link up next week and see how it's all going.
Yes, I'll speak to you then. Have fun, enjoy it.
Enjoy your holiday.
Bye.
Bye.